Chapter 11. "Oh no, you won't," said Tess, withdrawing towards the door. "Nonsense, I don't want to touch you. See, I'll stand on this side of the wire netting, and you can keep on the other, so you may feel quite safe. Now, look here, you screw up your lips too harshly. There it is so." He suited the action to the word, and whistled a line of ache, "Oh, take those lips away." But the illusion was lost upon Tess. "Now try," said D'Urberville. She attempted to look reserved, her face put on a sculptural severity. But he persisted in his demand, and at last, to get rid of him, she did put up her lips as directed for producing a clear note, laughing distressfully, however, and then blushing with vexation, that as he had laughed, he encouraged her with "Try again." Tess was quite serious, painfully serious by this time, and she tried ultimately and unexpectedly, emitting a real round sound. The momentary pleasure of success got the better of her, her eyes enlarged, and she involuntarily smiled in his face. "That's it. Now I have started you, you'll go on beautifully. There I said I would not come near you, and, in spite of such temptation as never before fell to mortal man, I'll keep my word. Tess, do you think my mother a queer old soul? I don't know much of her yet, sir. You'll find her so, she must be, to make you learn to whistle to her bullfinches. I am rather out of her books just now, but you will be quite in favor if you treat her livestock well. Good morning. If you meet with any difficulties and want help here, don't go to the bailiff, come to me." It was in the economy of this regime that Tess D'Urberville had undertaken to fill a place. Her first day's experiences were fairly typical of those which followed through many succeeding days. A familiarity with Alec D'Urberville's presence which that young man carefully cultivated in her by playful dialogue, and by jestingly calling her his cousin, when they were alone removed much of her original shyness of him, without, however, implanting any feeling which could engender shyness of a new and tenderer kind. But she was more pliable under his hands than a mere companionship would have made her, owing to her unavoidable dependence upon his mother, and, through that lady's comparative helplessness, upon him. She soon found that whistling to the bullfinches in Mrs. D'Urberville's room was no such onerous business, when as he had regained the art, for as he had caught from her musical mother numerous airs that suited those songsters admirably. A far more satisfactory time than when she practiced in the garden was this whistling by the cages each morning. Unrestrained by the young man's presence, she threw up her mouth, put her lips near the bars, and piped away in easeful grace to the attentive listeners. Mrs. D'Urberville slept in a large four-post bedstead hung with heavy damask curtains, and the bullfinches occupied the same apartment, where they flitted about freely at certain hours, and made little white spots on the furniture and upholstery. Once while Tess was at the window, where the cages were ranged, giving her lesson as usual, she thought she heard a rustling behind the bed. The old lady was not present, and turning round, the girl had an impression that the toes of a pair of boots were visible below the fringe of the curtains. Thereupon her whistling became so disjointed that the listener, if such there were, must have discovered her suspicion of his presence. She searched the curtains every morning after that, but never found anybody within them. Alec D'Urberville had evidently thought better of his freak, to terrify her by an ambush of that kind. Every village has its idiosyncrasy, its constitution, often its own code of morality. The levity of some of the younger women in and about Trantridge was marked, and was perhaps symptomatic of the choice spirit who ruled the slopes in that vicinity. The place had also a more abiding defect: it drank hard. The staple conversation on the farms around was on the uselessness of saving money, and smock-frocked arithmeticians, leaning on their plows or hoes, would enter into calculations of great nicety, to prove that parish relief was a fuller provision for a man in his old age than any which could result from savings out of their wages during a whole lifetime. The chief pleasure of these philosophers lay in going every Saturday night, when work was done, to Chaseborough, a decayed market town 2 or 3 miles distant, and, returning in the small hours of the next morning, to spend Sunday in sleeping off the dyspeptic effects of the curious compound sold to them as beer by the monopolizers of the once independent inns. For a long time Tess did not join in the weekly pilgrimages. But under pressure from matrons not much older than herself for a field man's wages being as high at 21 as at 40, marriage was early here Tess at length consented to go. Her first experience of the journey afforded her more enjoyment than as he had expected, the hilariousness of the others being quite contagious after her monotonous attention to the poultry farm all the week. She went again and again, being graceful and interesting, standing moreover on the momentary threshold of womanhood. Her appearance drew down upon her some sly regards from loungers in the streets of Chaseborough. Hence, though sometimes her journey to the town was made independently, she always searched for her fellows at nightfall, to have the protection of their companionship homeward. This had gone on for a month or two, when there came a Saturday in September, on which a fair and a market coincided, and the pilgrims from Trantridge sought double delights at the inns on that account. Tess's occupations made her late in setting out, so that her comrades reached the town long before her. It was a fine September evening, just before sunset, when yellow lights struggle with blue shades in air-like lines, and the atmosphere itself forms a prospect without aid from more solid objects, except the innumerable winged insects that dance in it. Through this low-lit mistiness Tess walked leisurely along. She did not discover the coincidence of the market with the fair till as he had reached the place, by which time it was close upon dusk. Her limited marketing was soon completed, and then as usual she began to look about for some of the Trantridge cottagers. At first she could not find them, and she was informed that most of them had gone to what they called a private little jig at the house of a hay trusser and peat dealer who had transactions with their farm. He lived in an out-of-the-way nook of the townlet, and in trying to find her course thither her eyes fell upon Mr. D'Urberville standing at a street corner. "What, my beauty, you here so late?" he said. She told him that she was simply waiting for company homeward. "I'll see you again," said he over her shoulder as she went on down the back lane. Approaching the hay trusser she could hear the fiddled notes of a reel proceeding from some building in the rear, but no sound of dancing was audible, an exceptional state of things for these parts, where as a rule the stamping drowned the music. The front door being open she could see straight through the house into the garden at the back as far as the shades of night would allow, and nobody appearing to her knock she traversed the dwelling, and went up the path to the outhouse, whence the sound had attracted her. It was a windowless erection used for storage, and from the open door there floated into the obscurity a mist of yellow radiance, which at first Tess thought to be illuminated smoke. But on drawing nearer she perceived that it was a cloud of dust, lit by candles within the outhouse, whose beams upon the haze carried forward the outline of the doorway into the wide night of the garden. When she came close and looked in she beheld indistinct forms racing up and down to the figure of the dance, the silence of their footfalls arising from their being overshoe in crop, that is to say, the powdery residuum from the storage of peat and other products, the stirring of which by their turbulent feet created the nebulosity that involved the scene. Through this floating, fusty debris of peat and hay, mixed with the perspirations and warmth of the dancers, and forming together a sort of vegeto-human pollen, the muted fiddles feebly pushed their notes, in marked contrast to the spirit with which the measure was trodden out. They coughed as they danced, and laughed as they coughed. Of the rushing couples there could barely be discerned more than the high lights, the indistinctness shaping them to satyrs clasping nymphs, a multiplicity of pans whirling, a multiplicity of syrinxes, Lotus attempting to elude Priapus, and always failing. At intervals a couple would approach the doorway for air, and the haze no longer veiling their features, The demigods resolved themselves into the homely personalities of her own next-door neighbors. Could Trantridge in 2 or 3 short hours have metamorphosed itself thus madly? Some Sileni of the throng sat on benches and hay trusses by the wall, and one of them recognized her. The mates don't think it respectable to dance at the Flower de Luce, he explained. They don't like to let everybody see which be their fancy men. Besides, the house sometimes shuts up, just when their gents begin to get creased. So we come here, and send out for liquor. But when be any of you going home? Asked Tess with some anxiety. Now Amist directly. This is all but the last jig. She waited. The real drew to a close, and some of the party were in the mind of starting. But others would not, and another dance was formed. This surely would end it, thought Tess. But it merged in yet another. She became restless and uneasy, yet, having waited so long, it was necessary to wait longer, on account of the fair the roads were dotted with roving characters of possibly ill intent, and, though not fearful of measurable dangers, she feared the unknown. Had she been near Marlet she would have had less dread. Don't ye be nervous, my dear good soul, expostulated, between his coughs, a young man with a wet face, and his straw hat, so far back upon his head, that the brim encircled it like the nimbus of a saint. Hats here, hurry? Tomorrow is Sunday, thank God, and we can sleep it off in church time. Now, have a turn with me? She did not abhor dancing, but she was not going to dance here. The movement grew more passionate. The fiddlers behind the luminous pillar of cloud now and then varied the air by playing on the wrong side of the bridge or with the back of the bow. But it did not matter. The panting shapes spun onwards. They did not vary their partners if their inclination were to stick to previous ones. Changing partners simply meant that a satisfactory choice had not as yet been arrived at by one or other of the pair, and by this time every couple had been suitable matched. It was then that the ecstasy and the dream began, in which emotion was the matter of the universe, and matter but an adventitious intrusion likely to hinder you from spinning where you wanted to spin. Suddenly there was a dull thump on the ground. A couple had fallen, and lay in a mixed heap. The next couple, unable to check its progress, came toppling over the obstacle. An inner cloud of dust rose around the prostrate figures amid the general one of the room, in which a twitching entanglement of arms and legs was discernible. You shall catch it for this, my gentlemen, when you get home. Burst in female accents from the human heap those of the unhappy partner of the man whose clumsiness had caused the mishap. She happened also to be his recently married wife, in which assortment there was nothing unusual at Trantridge, as long as any affection remained between wedded couples, and, indeed, it was not uncustomary in their later lives, to avoid making odd lots of the single people between whom there might be a warm understanding. A loud laugh from behind Tess's back, in the shade of the garden, united with the titter within the room. She looked round, and saw the red coal of a cigar. Alec d'Urberville was standing there alone. He beckoned to her, and she reluctantly retreated towards him. Well, my beauty, what are you doing here? She was so tired after her long day and her walk, that she confided her trouble to him that as he had been waiting ever, since he saw her to have their company home, because the road at night was strange to her. But it seems they will never leave off, and I really think I will wait no longer. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.